What's going on, guys? Welcome to another episode of Teeing It Up with CMD. It's the number one sports podcast in Southeast Metro Detroit. I'm your host, Connor. That it stands for the C. And I'm with my co-host, the V of CMD, Vladdy. What's up, man? How are you? How's your week going?
I'm doing good. Long week. Have to work all 5 days. I know here I am complaining about a perk that everyone always has to deal with. So look at me go. But had a great last weekend. Went to the Michigan State game. We'll get talking about that when we get there. But can't complain. I mean, I was thinking about this. It's a lot harder to talk about what I've been doing the last week when I don't actually have too many things to do on the weekends, as opposed to about a month and a half ago, I was traveling every weekend. So it's tougher to get this filler in. But I don't know. I'm ready to go. It's an exciting episode. I actually think there's a good amount to talk about with the NFL. So I will turn it over to you. How are you? How have you been? What's going on?
I'm good. This past weekend I was with you, so I don't really have much to share there. And yeah, this week's been pretty mid. Nothing to count on, nothing really to say negatively or positively. So let's just get into the sports. Today we'll do our usual football talk. I know I'm like 10 days late. Maybe even 2 weeks late, a little less than 2 weeks, but basically 2 weeks late on the Red Wings. I'm going to do a short couple minute preview on them and what the early season has in store for them. Then we'll get into the usual football talk. So Wings, I guess we'll just start there. A team that is now in year six of the Yzerman regime. Is that right? Yeah, that's right. A team that was 1 point and basically one goal away from being a playoff team last year. You looked for them to make some offseason moves. They didn't do a ton. They kind of stayed stagnant. They're relying on a prospect pool that's one of the best in the league. However, when are they going to bring those guys up is a massive if, when, how, whatever all those words are. But anyways, for additions that are actually going to probably you'll see in the everyday lineup, probably the biggest one. Vladimir Tarasenko, he signs after winning the cup in Florida. He's a two-time Stanley Cup champion, a guy who's a consistent 30 goal scorer in his early to mid-30s, kind of a little past his prime. Look for him to play a second-line role. Off to a bit of a slow start, but he does have two goals in the first six games. The other ones are Gustafsson from the Rangers. He'll play a nice kind of depth defenseman role. And then you sign guys – some very role-esque guys that I don't even really want to go down because they're not even really worth mentioning, to be honest. It's a lot of the same early on. It's a 3-3 start. This looks like an average team that, again, lacks offensive firepower, which was kind of the problem last year. Outside of Dylan Larkin and Kane when he wants to, where's the offense going to come from? And you've kind of seen that in the first six games. Not a ton of goal scoring when they've lost. They've either been shut out or given up one or scored one goal besides the opening night game against Pittsburgh. Not a single guy on the team is a point per game right now. Raymond, Comfort, Larkin, and DeBrincat have four in the six games. Somebody's got to be a point per game guy if you want to have success in the NHL from an offensive standpoint. From a defensive standpoint, not the strength of this team, but again, kind of a middle of the pack role. You didn't do much besides Gustafsson. Simon Edvidsson, one of their big prospects, seventh overall pick in 2020, is now up. The 21-year-old is, and I think from what I've heard, I haven't gotten to watch a ton of the games because of Bally Sports. People are impressed with what he's done early on. They have him kind of playing with a mixture of not that good of players, to be honest. I don't know. Like, it's a little more of the same. Raymond, Sider, Larkin are kind of carrying the load right now. This team is, you know, lackluster. They're not a bad team. They're not a good team. But what they are bad at is goaltending, and that's the last thing I want to talk about. That was an issue last year and probably the main reason they missed the playoffs last year, and it was not really addressed. You added Cam Talbot, who, despite being an all-star last year, he's in his late 30s and is not really ready to take on a full-on starting role. You already sent down Ville Husso after one game. So now it's kind of been this Alex Lyon, Cam Talbot show so far, and I'm not sure that tandem is going to really change the needle from what last year's goaltending gave. And the other thing is, I was a little frustrated with, I know we talked about in the summer that they made kind of pieces moves and no big splashes. And that's kind of what Yzerman's done the last couple of years. And it's a lot of just adding older, maybe role players instead of giving the kids an actual chance to play. And I just wonder how long you can go into this season, after this very mediocre start with this approach of let's just throw the old average guys out there instead of giving the kids a chance. And will fans start to say, hey, I if we're going to lose and be this middle of the pack team, I'd rather just be bad, play the kids, let them get experience, see who we actually want for the future, and get a better draft pick than this kind of middle of the road crap. I mean, it's obviously a long season. I just get a little frustrated with this kind of approach and this slow approach with the Iser plan, so to speak. I know Marco Casper, one of the big prospects, has been up the last two games due to some injuries, specifically to Fisher. But yeah, I guess that's kind of all I want to say about the Wings. It's kind of their roster. It's kind of not much has changed. Is this a team that can take the step next step? Maybe, like I said, you have Raymond, Sider are now a year older and now are under contract for the next 8 and 9 years. Larkin does his thing. You think DeBrincat is going to bring a little more from the goal scoring department this year. And you have Patrick Kane, who is off to a very slow start this year, which is somewhat worrisome, who you signed to another 1 year deal. So that's the Red Wings.
I have one question
Yeah.
about the young guys, because I'm unaware of this. Do they have, or does NHL have maybe similar rules to the way the MLB does, where teams will intentionally not bring up the young guys for like 2 weeks so they don't get an arbitration year off the contract, or does that not work that way in hockey?
No, it doesn't really work that way. Once you're signed, so if they're in Grand Rapids, that burns a year off their entry-level contract regardless. They just get paid the – there's an NHL rate and an AHL rate depending on who you're playing that particular game for.
Okay.
But, yeah, you play – I think it's 9 or 10 pro games in a season. Regardless, you burn a year off your entry-level deal. So a lot of times you'll see it at the end of the year. Guys that are playing juniors, those 19, 20-year-olds that are or college that are ready to come up, they'll play their college season and then they won't sign until there's, whatever it is. I think it's 11 games you can play. They'll play their 9 or 10 games at the end of the year, and that doesn't burn a year off their entry-level deal. So you see that at the end of the year, not so much the beginning or middle, like the arbitration stuff. Like Marco Casper, I mean, I can check his entry level deal, but I believe you're going to have to already re-sign him after next season.
Yeah,
Regardless.
I would say, 'cause just a question from an ignorance or from a non-knowing standpoint for myself of how it all works and a potential why do they not bring them up, but seems it is not the way that they're trying to kind of finesse extra years of team control the way baseball does. While you sit there and look, I'm gonna do a very quick Detroit Pistons preview. This team is bad. They are going to stay bad. As long as they are not historically bad like they were last year, we're not going to talk about them. Or as long as they don't do something that to warrant talking about, kind of like how the Detroit Tigers were not mentioned on this podcast from about April to September, damn near, while the streak was going. And that's just going to happen. We're not going to talk about them. Go Pistons. Hopefully, Asar Thompson is not have his career ended, but that would be nice.
Yeah, I saw that he was hurt, but it looked like from what I saw day to day.
No, he's had blood clots last year
Oh,
and they
okay.
just shut him down and they've provided no information since then. So it's actually kind of scary.
Okay, yeah, that's rather serious.
Yes, blood clots as a 20-year-old human being is very serious in any kind of stretch of the
Context of
woods.
life,
And the
yeah.
fact that nothing comes out and they just continuously roll with, oh, well, they kind of give you the coach speak, the politician's word soup, and we'll see what happens there. But I don't know. So there's the Detroit Pistons preview. Go team.
Yeah. Let's get into the real sport, football. We'll start like we always do in college. The Michigan State Spartans is where we usually start, and that's where we'll start this week. 32 to
Absolutely.
20 What?
Absolutely.
Yes. Okay. 32-20 win over Iowa. Aiden Childs looks like the guy that we've finally been seeing. The defense was spectacular in the first half, held them off in the second half. And Jonathan Kim, NFL. I don't know. It's the first time this Spartans team goes and beats a team they were, a 5 or 6 point underdog against. Looked competent, looked good. Obviously, when you go play Oregon, then Ohio State, and then have a bye, it's nice to play a team that's not named Oregon or Ohio State. And I'm trying not to because I feel like we were pretty excited. We were obviously watched together at it. And I think we were pretty like, oh my gosh, like could this team win 8, 9 games now? Like, is this like,
Hey,
I'm
don't say
trying
now.
not
I've
to.
always said we can win 8 or 9 games.
True, true.
You
I
were
was
the
the one that
emo
was
fan
getting
at the
very
beginning of the
excited.
season.
And I don't want to get too far ahead of myself given what we have seen and kind of the ebbs and flows of what we've seen. But this was a nice win in the Jonathan Smith regime. He now goes to 2-2, and you get that Big Ten win against the team not named, like I said, Ohio State or Oregon, and really cement yourself moving forward in the Big Ten. So it was just a nice win to have. It was a bit of a surprise how well the offense looked. I'd like to see them finish some drives a little more, maybe, but the way they were able to move the ball with the two big receivers that they have, the run game opened up a bit more than it had in the past. And you made a very, very competent team in Iowa on defense look scared at times. So I was very impressed with the performance.
Yeah, I'll start just on kind of the pregame portion. We kind of had an impromptu decision to go to that game. I'm very glad we did. Beautiful weather for mid-October. Tailgating was great. Got to see a bunch of friends that kind of haven't seen the last couple of years. So that was fun from my perspective. Obviously, it's always great to be back on campus. Let's get the actual game though. That was the absolute perfect thing, except for one play, one mistake where kind of
Yeah.
the classic Aiden Childs lobotomy. But
Right.
I'm not going to sit there and beat the kid up for it because Iowa is a good defensive team. But that's the perfect thing that we could have seen coming out of a bye week. You mentioned the defensive side. We took what was one of the best rushing attacks in the Big Ten and completely nullified it. I understand the box score says
75
23.
yard touchdown.
Exactly. The box score says 23 for 133, which is almost 6 yards per carry, which doesn't sound great. But as you just mentioned, that includes a 70 or 75 yard touchdown from Caleb Johnson. And if you wipe that, it's 22 for 60. So if you're going to realistically kind of, if you don't expect to give that play up, but maybe someone was a little overeager, lost contain, did not set an edge, and he just took off and kind of went down the sideline. You held them to under 3 yards per carry. That's massive for kind of an Iowa team that I don't want to say excels in the run because Iowa football's offense has never excelled in anything. But for a team that can kind of claim that they're good at something, you completely nullify it. It was beautiful. They looked completely perplexed all game, and especially that first half. They didn't know what was going on. It was amazing. On the offensive side, anytime you complete an entire game without punting, that's a
Yep.
very good sign. And you mentioned it does go 50-50 because we talk about Jonathan Kim potentially being an NFL kicker, but for us to talk about that means a lot of drives did not end in touchdowns. And that's what that first half was six drives, six field goals, and one of them just kind of pulled slightly from 55 at the end. You obviously want to finish more of them off, but that's just kind of what Iowa is. It's bend, don't break, and try and force the other team's quarterback into mistakes. It's what they've always been, so I'm not going to sit here and pound the table about that. You had total control of that game the entire time. You mentioned the run game gets going a little bit. You mentioned the receivers. Nick Marsh looks sensational. That connection with Aiden Childs looks very, very good, and it can become very, very special if they are both not, or if either of them are not bought out by a bigger program in the off season, and if we got to see 2 more years of them growing together, that would be amazing. I think from a kind of specifically Aiden Childs standpoint, I loved what I saw. That's the most willing I've seen him as a runner. I think he had 11
Yeah,
carries, so
definitely.
that was great. That's what you and I have been screaming about. That's what a lot of people have been screaming about is, you are an athlete. You have this gift. Use it so that can open up the rest of the defense because now
Yep.
they have to respect you taking off. I mean, Jonathan Kim very quickly. He might not have the Brandon Aubrey 65-yard leg in terms of power, but he definitely has NFL accuracy. So more power to him, and I expect him to definitely get a chance to kick on Sundays at some point in his career, even if that doesn't necessarily mean he's going to get drafted for it. And again, just overall, that is the absolute perfect game we could have seen coming off of a bye week, and then right before, and as you mentioned before, playing two games against teams that are just not in the same stratosphere as you. I think that bye week was massive in that regard, not only to physically get healthy, but maybe mentally just wash yourself of that kind of, I don't want to say embarrassment because I don't think we necessarily got embarrassed by other team, but just kind of forget that you got outclassed by Oregon and Ohio State. And you come out, Iowa, winnable game. I said that back in August. You didn't believe me, Mr. Oh, we're gonna go 5-7. And they've got themselves in a situation where 8 wins is absolutely realistic. We'll talk about this Michigan game, we'll preview it. But beyond that, though, Indiana without their Kurt Roark or whatever his name is, quarterback.
I heard it's only going to be this week.
He had surgery.
Yeah, I still heard it was only going to be this week.
That's crazy. Well, that's I was gonna say maybe
It's
you
a
have
finger.
something.
It's not like his ankle or his knee.
I thought it was like a whole wrist, but okay, I never scratch what I was about to say. We'll just kind of focus on Michigan when we get there. Again, just well done by Jonathan Smith, kind of showcasing his ability as a coach. You get a bye week, you get to implement some of the stuff you want to do, and you have your team looking like a functional team coming off a bye week, unlike another team in the state.
Yeah, no, and not only like you mentioned Jonathan Smith having them ready to go, but like we sat there at 12-0 and was like, as good as that half was, like this game is like one play or one score away from being close. And it was. They scored that long touchdown with 7 minutes left to go 25-20. You cut it to one score, and what do? You go down the field, have a nice 5 minute drive that ends in a touchdown, and you end the game right there. That's what you need to do. That's like NFL pro. That's like Lion stuff, what they do. That's, and like you said, it's better than another team was in our neck of the woods this week. So I guess we could lead into that. Michigan loses their third game of the year, 21-7 on the road against Illinois. It just kind of seemed like it was a little bit more of the norm for Michigan this year as far as not having a quarterback. They haven't even named one yet for this week. We're at Wednesday night as we record this right now. And yeah, I mean, or I don't want to take away from Illinois because they're a solid team this year. They're nothing special, but they're a solid team. But that's not a game that Jim Harbaugh loses. That's not a game that Michigan is accustomed to for their standard losing, whether on the road or at the big house. And you quite frankly got kind of outclassed by that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not gonna sit here and try and do anything or try and kind of knock Illinois, but I'm gonna knock Michigan. 10 days ago, Purdue, one win Purdue played Illinois and put up 49 points on them. And then a week later, the University of Michigan, coming off of a bye week, puts up 7. I mean, like I said, that's just the difference in coaching class, coaching ability between somebody who is completely out of his depth and a guy who knows what he's doing, who can kind of build a program.
Where our I think that's harsh on both sides, like harsh on both sides to say that.
I don't think it is. Look, you can again, Purdue, one win Purdue put up 49 points on Illinois, and Michigan can only put up 7.
Yeah,
Are
I
you that
understand. I'm
bad?
saying I'm saying like the more the general take of like Sharon Moore is way over his head just because he's 4-3 through 7 games.
Fair enough.
Like I agree, you like unacceptable to come out and play. Let's be real. I don't think Illinois will probably be ranked at the end of the season. I don't know
No.
what their schedule looks like. They're 22 in the country right now.
They're losing to us.
Yeah, they're playing Oregon on Saturday. They'll play us. Okay, they might be ranked by the end of the year by this because they're probably going to be 10-2. But
Now, the only thing but that I want to talk specifically about that Michigan Illinois game before getting into the preview of us and then hitting the rest of college football is, did you see those helmets?
yeah, the jersey in general was terrible, but the helmets, yeah.
Oh, the helmets were beautiful. I don't
Oh,
know.
you liked them? I thought
I
they were
love
terrible.
them.
Let me make sure. Let me look at him again.
So that you're right, the jersey was disgusting. That whatever that blue was, like if you're Illinois, you got to come out wearing orange, especially at home. However, those helmets, kind of that, but
Spray
they were,
paint.
yeah, I mean they were pretty much hand painted to look like the leather helmets of the old days. I thought they looked amazing.
Yeah, I just like don't like the look in general. The helmets are, I agree that's fine, but the whole look is just not
Again,
for me.
I completely agree with you there. If you look at it as an entire uniform, Illinois football should never look like that. But if you look at
Yeah.
the helmet in a vacuum, that was gorgeous.
Yeah. Let's get into the game. This is a weird one. I think people are looking into a little too much Saturday's results for both sides. The line started at like 7, 8 points, I think we saw it Saturday night. It's at 3.5 as we talk right now, which essentially with home field advantage means they're calling this a toss-up.
Yeah.
This is going to be the maybe I'm just precautionary with, like I said, trying not to overreact. But Michigan is still a more talented football team. And especially on the defensive side of the ball, despite all of the offensive woes, the defense has not really and continued to be the problem. They haven't given up 30 points this year. They've only given up, oh, sorry, they did to Texas, besides, never mind. But my point still stands is that I think Michigan, I said, and I know I said it last week, especially to you about how I thought Michigan wasn't State wasn't going to score more than like 17 points against Iowa. They go for 32. I don't see Michigan State. I'm going to say somewhere around the 24 amount. I don't see them scoring more than that against Michigan. The question is I don't know if Michigan can score 24 against anybody right now.
Yeah, I've kind of watched like the narratives of like fans of media over the last week, and it's almost made me nervous.
It's
Everyone is
same,
talking
same.
about Michigan State winning this game outright, and I'm sitting there like, uh-oh. Like I wanted to go in there, not necessarily playing with house money because it's a rivalry game and you always want to kick the shit out of the other guy, so you always have something to quote unquote lose. But the way people are talking about this, I mean, the line in the past week, I'm pretty sure, has gone from Michigan minus like 11 and a half to right now it's minus 3. That
That's what
scares
I
me.
said.
Like, obviously, that's great because that's exhibiting the fact that Michigan looks awful. But it just almost makes me sit here and get nervous about the fact that we're going to end up doing something stupid and there's going to be these people are going to have the players are going to have some message in their heads where, oh, we should win this game. It's like, you should, but not because the media is telling you that. You should win it because fuck those guys.
So there's two things with my theory with that change in the media. One is I think people just kind of overreacted to Michigan putting up a stinker and Michigan State putting up their best game of the season just last week. The other thing is I think this is Michigan bullshit putting up their guards and being like, well, we're actually the underdog. You can't beat this team. You can't beat any team. We're so bad. As you didn't want to say that when you lost to Texas. You didn't want to say that when you lost to USC, but now you lose a third game. Now we come to the big house, and now you're an underdog. Now you are suck. Now you're so lost. I think there is an element of the Michigan fans protecting their guards because they know if they lose this game, that 3-year run is over, and you're in a new time of Michigan football. You'd be 4-4. You lost to Michigan State at home. Ohio State is a good team this year. You're going to get pounded by them. You're going to maybe even not make a bowl game the way this season is going. I think this is them putting up their guards to make sure that this is not the beginning of the end.
I am 100% in agreement with you. I think this game, if we want to talk a little bit about that and not really about the narratives, I think this will purely come down to turnovers.
Yeah.
We have a quarterback who is getting better with the turnovers or lack thereof, but has shown that he can turn it over. And then we have an entire program because I can't just single one quarterback out because they all can't hold on to the football on the other side, who also like to turn it over. And so I think whoever wins this turnover battle, whoever wins the turnover department, will have the kind of the upper edge on winning the game. Obviously, it's a rivalry. You never know what can happen beyond that. But it will be a very big point. Another thing that kind of a little bit makes me nervous is is the fact that Michigan is in such disarray almost helped to him, is because like you said, they haven't announced a quarterback yet. Who are we supposed to game plan for?
Well, I would say that like shouldn't matter given how bad all three have been, but it does matter to a sense of like Orji versus the other two,
Yep,
right?
just
Because that's
because
a
he's
complete
such a unique, yeah.
yeah, you're gonna game plan and do something completely get different if or you're not gonna throw the ball 25 plus times if Orji's in the game. And you might have to with the other two. So from that sense, yeah, maybe that is a bit of a disadvantage. But like I said, I do think it like there's an element of like all three of these guys have been bad. You've seen all three of them on tape. There should be no excuse.
Totally in agreement with you there. Just another thing that I kind of thought about when kind of figuring out how I think this game might go.
We want to make score predictions?
Sure.
You go first.
Give me the Michigan State Spooky Spartans 24 and the Michigan Not Spooky Wolverines 21.
I think this is going to be one of the ugliest games ever. And if you're not in the state of Michigan, you're going to turn this television off so fast if you even get Big Ten Network. Give me Michigan State 13, Michigan 9.
Oh my God, that's like the 2012 game where Brendan Gibbons, the sexual offender himself, beat us with four field goals in the rain.
Yep. Let's continue into the rest of the what was the rest of the week. Major storylines is Indiana kind of plays their first real team, if you want to call Nebraska that. They blow them out. They're kind of one of the bigger like storylines as far as new programs and new teams and the flattening out, I'm going to call it, of the Power Five schools. They're going to play Ohio State, but outside of that, everything is right in front of them. They do play us, they do play Washington, and they do play Michigan, who are all, not complete gimmies. If you're an Indiana school, but I'm impressed with them. I think they're the biggest storyline as far as what cool teams being there besides Army and Navy, of course, which we can get into. That was kind of my surprise of the week, besides maybe Alabama going down to Knoxville and losing again. Like we talked about it when they lost to Vanderbilt, that's just not a game Saban loses. A 24-17 game against Tennessee is just not a game Saban loses, and they have to be absolutely. It's so funny because they're 5-2, and if Michigan State was 5-2 right now, I would be jumping for joy with Jonathan Smith, but they are probably calling for this poor Kalen DeBoer's head right now at 5-2. They have no room for error now. I believe the rest of the schedule is fairly easy. They're going to play Missouri, who I say what you want. I don't think they're that good. They're 17-point favorites, and they'll play LSU at LSU, but the rest of their season is kind of right in front of them, Mercer, Oklahoma, and then the Iron Bowl. So I guess LSU has kind of worked their way back into the picture. But Alabama, my, I guess, slacker of the week. I'm a little surprised, and they just don't really have the kind of toughness to go and win some of these SEC games. And that's a very uncharacteristic Alabama trait.
Yeah, I'll start with Alabama and then maybe talk a couple of things that I also saw from the see the weekend. We were tailgating and we were at a football game, so I can't sit here and pretend that I watched these football games because I didn't. But with Alabama specifically, this team looks unprepared in the post-Saban era. From what I minimally got to saw from Tennessee, Bama, Jalen Milroe looked very bad, if not even hurt. And for me, though, the most damning thing, I didn't see this in live time. I saw it, I think, yesterday or Monday. It was fourth and short, and Bama tries some QB sneak halfback dive through the middle, and they have two wide receivers lined up on the outside. I don't know if you saw that play, but those guys jump up in the like, ball gets snapped, and I'm talking about two receivers on the top side of the screen. They both jump up in the air and do some fake layup thing. While their team runs one of the stupidest quarterback sneaks I've ever seen and doesn't get the yardage. And in my head, I'm like, This is something you would have never seen under Saban. This is
Yeah.
something that if he did see, he would have personally made the team run back to Alabama from Tennessee. He would not have let him get on the bus or the plane or whatever method of transportation they took to get to it. They would have had to hitchhike at best coming back home. And that's just something that kind of talks about the discipline or lack thereof within that program post Nick Saban. And I will try and be fair here. That's obviously unsustainable, and if you continue to see that, Kalen DeBoer has to go, but it is not Nick Saban anymore, so you can't just use his
Yeah.
barometer of, oh, well, this didn't happen under him, so it can't ever happen. Kalen DeBoer has to put his own stamp on this Alabama team. It just seems like there is a little bit more lackadaisicalness with this team than we've ever seen in our lifetimes.
Yeah, and like you said, that's such a like. Is it like you could don't even want to call it lackadaisical just because of how high the standard used to be? It's just like from that standard, it's much lower. Really, the only other thing in college, I mean, I was going to mention BYU. They sneak by Oklahoma State. They're kind of like Indiana right now, the surprise undefeated team. And they might run the table. It's them and Iowa State right now for that four. Believe it or not, for a bye in the college football tournament, which is crazy to say. And then I think the last major story, obviously, is Georgia getting back on top, kind of outclassing Texas. I think everyone's seen the clips now of how just impressive that defensive line performance was. Quinn Ewers and March Manning were running for their lives. And this was kind of Texas's first test in the SEC. You wanted to be here. You're going to play the big dogs every year, sometimes multiple times a year. And at home, you got punched in the mouth. You can do whatever you want against Kansas State and Texas Tech in October, but try playing the dogs in, end of October, six, seven games into the season, and see how you fare. They just looked outclassed. I don't think they're done or bad by any stretch of the imagination, but I'm not even really ready to crown them in that class. And I think you can kind of call that class Oregon, Ohio State, Georgia, and everybody else now. Like, that's how bad of the outclassing it was.
Yeah, I mean, Quinn Ewers played so poorly that he got benched for a series.
So I don't understand
Neither do I. That I think that sends a stupid message to your team.
Yeah.
If I think the I heard someone say this once and it was pretty good. If your quarterback is one bad game or one bad series away from getting benched, he's not your quarterback because you clearly don't have faith in him. If you have to basically like punish him every single time and say, "Oh, well, if you don't play perfect, we're going to move on to the
But
next."
I don't even think that's the Quinn Ewers problem. I think it was just like Georgia was outmanning them, and not to a bit of a joke there, outmanning them. So Arch Manning came in,
There you
but
go.
you saw Arch Manning go in and really just kind of put up the same stinker, and that like it was like it was not the quarterback position's fault. It was the entire offense's fault. And so now you just sent a wrong message, like you said, to your team and to Quinn Ewers. That listen, like if things don't go my way, I'm just going to take you out. Like you're not, I don't trust you. Like I just think long term that wasn't the right decision. But obviously, in the heat of the moment, it's easier to say that.
Yeah, completely agree. Georgia kind of puts themselves in a path to get back into the SEC title game. Kind of maybe they're set up to play Texas in a rematch. We'll see how the rest of the season shakes up. I don't think I have anything else from the college sphere. Do we get to the NFL?
Yeah, I didn't either. Let's go to the NFL. Start like we always do with the hometown squad.
The Spooky Lions?
Rolling down the field, down the field we go. And what a game that was. I mean, you could say what you want about the Lions. And well, first of all, my first thought was like the Vikings are very real and are going to be like a playoff team and a contender in this NFC North for the long run. I'm fairly confident in that. And the second team is that like the Lions are a legitimate Super Bowl contender. And I mean, we can get into the nitty-gritty of the game. You come out and lay a bit of a stinker. I think we can agree on that. And then Jared Goff does Jared Goff things. You're up 21-10 going into half. You blow that. Now you're down. And then what do good teams do when they're down? They go on last minute drives just like they did, and they find a way to win games. And they actually use their kicker, which the Lions don't seem to like to do. So that's the general outline of the game before we kind of go into specifics.
Yeah, start from the beginning. You mentioned the stinker. Those first 5 minutes, I don't think could have gone any worse than they did. You have Kevin Zeitler not playing, and I think the rookie Awashika, or however you say his name, he
Yeah, I'd
came.
never seen him before.
Oh, he played one of the other games when one of the they kind of playing musical chairs at the interior part of that line when someone's hurt, just because Graham Glasgow can play at center if he needs to,
Yeah.
and so Awashika is just kind of like a utility guy at either guard spot, but. He gets called for two holdings on the first drive. We find ourselves at 3rd and 27 because of it. They get a little dump off to Monty, and Monty makes the most of it, makes it 4th and 7. Then our coach does his best Stephen Childs impression, lobotomizes himself. What the fuck are you thinking, running that fake punt that early in a game on 4th and 7 with that type of play call? Like,
That's what I was just gonna go back to is my like, yeah, okay, like I know that's like what Dan Campbell does, but that was a terrible fourth and you gotta get 7 yards and you run the back like the fake snap run play. Like I didn't really understand that.
and look, I they think they kind of like set it up to have like either a pitch forward or like some kind of toss, but it's like you're running guys to the short side. That's never gonna work. Not to
Yeah.
mention, what there's like an there's a tendency aspect to this. If your basically calling card is I'm always unpredictable, guess what? You're predictable. If your entire
True.
shtick is I go for it on 4th down and I'm gonna catch you napping, you're not catching anybody napping because people know. Minnesota was so prepared for that. I don't even think they got back to the line of scrimmage on that fake punt. I think they lost
No.
yardage. So,
And then it doesn't help, like it's an extra slap in the face when they score. What was it, 2 plays later?
yep, with an Aaron Jones untouched run, you follow it up then with Awashika getting called for a false start, and then he gets called for a second false start, but they give it to Penei Sewell on accident, or maybe they just wanted to kind of save the kid from embarrassment of hitting him with a fourth penalty in the first three snaps, which shouldn't be possible because he was that poor. He tried his hardest to sell that game at the beginning. Then David Montgomery gets hurt, goes out of the game, goes to the bike for 2 series. And you're thinking to yourself 5 minutes in, what the fuck are we doing? We should just go home. Forfeit the rest of the game. Don't get anybody hurt. Let's get out of here. We started with the ball and 3 minutes into it, we're already 7-0 down or 10-0 down in that regard after Minnesota pretty much just dog walked us for 60 yards before the defense
Yeah.
woke up. So that game could not have started any worse than it did. And then I don't know what flipped, but Minnesota kind of forgot how to move the ball. The run game with Jahmyr Gibbs just completely took over and did whatever they wanted to and exactly what this team does, which is 5, 6 yards per carry, 1st and 10, 2nd and 5, repeat.
Yep.
Over and over and over again, right down the field. And you mentioned this Minnesota team's good. That's not like you sat there and abused a Dallas or a Seattle line that didn't have their starting players. And I have a friend at work who's a Vikings fan, and on Monday he hits me with the, well, if Blake Cashman was playing, you wouldn't do that to us. And it's like, shut up, man. We ran all over you. That was just kind of that's what the Detroit Lions are and can be. And that's the type of we've everyone said it. That's the type of offense that can win anywhere, that can travel, that can play indoors or outdoors. That was beautiful. And then you mentioned Jared Goff kind of, I want to say wakes up because I don't know if he was ever asleep, but Jared Goff continues to play at probably one of the highest levels that the league's ever seen. I mean, you look at some
Yeah.
of the numbers, he's the only quarterback, and this Detroit Lions team is the only team ever recorded to have more touchdowns than incompletions over a 4-game span. Which is 18 touchdowns to 16 incompletions. Jared Goff is the only quarterback to ever have over 140 passer rating in 3 straight games. Or not only. That's the first time since Aaron Rodgers in 2011. I think they said Kurt Warner in 99 with the greatest show on turf. And there was some guy in like the 50s who did it. But all three of those guys won MVP awards when they put up those kinds of stat lines. And that's what Jared Goff's doing. He's playing at an incredible, incredible level. I mean, do you remember a month and a half ago when we were talking about how he needs to wake
I
up?
was
I
gonna bring
don't
that
remember
up.
that.
Yeah.
That's how well he's played for this long now that I don't remember it. It's amazing.
And you can give like for me, it's like you can give Ben Johnson his credit for the golf thing, but he just like these last couple games, just like the eye test for me is he looks just so comfortable in the pocket. I've never seen him move around in the pocket as well as he
Yes.
has.
Mobile
He moves
dog.
up in the pocket and is willing to throw balls. He has great sense. The Amon-Ra one, I believe, was the one where he almost had a strip sack there. And he moves up and has a strong
Yep.
forearm and is able to give the ball to Amon-Ra. And he just has a different kind of presence in the pocket than I've kind of really ever seen him in the last couple of weeks.
It's been incredible. I mean, everyone used to say, oh, if he gets hit, he gets rattled. That doesn't seem to exist anymore. He's throwing in the face of pressure while getting hit after people are attempting to strip sack. He's looked incredible. Now, unfortunately, Lamar Jackson had to dunk a five touchdown performance on the league's head a day later. So I can't necessarily call Jared Goff the MVP front runner, but it should right now. The only people who should be able to have betting odds on the MVP award should be Lamar Jackson at the top, Jared Goff 2, Josh Allen 3. And if you really want to give Derrick Henry some credit, just because that Ravens team looks unstoppable, you can throw Derrick Henry in there as well. But it is kind of the QB award, and those are the three. I don't know how the fuck Patrick Mahomes is the betting favorite right now, and that really needs to change because he's got the most interceptions in the league. He has less than one touchdown per interception thrown. He's winning games because of his defense. He's kind of doing the classic Tom Brady where it's like, oh, Patrick Mahomes is so good. He told his defense to go do that. He told his defense to go pick off Brock Purdy three times. And somehow that's translating to MVP money odds. I don't understand it, but here we are. I guess that's what happens when you're one of the greatest quarterbacks ever. I also want to talk about the defense, specifically the
I
pass
would,
rush. The pass rush does not exist. Though they mentioned how the Lions blitzed on 60% of their snaps, which is the highest of the Aaron Glenn era. They also mentioned that of the snaps that we did not blitz, which I believe there was 28 of them, we only generated three pressures. And that's horrific. Because for starters, I don't think pressure should count as a stat anyway. I think that's kind of stupid. Like, tackle the quarterback or don't. If you only generate three of the fake stat and zero of the real one, you're in trouble rushing four because you can't always blitz like that. You are going to eventually be found out. So,
It was a very misleading four sacks like
oh, yeah. Oh,
stat
yeah.
line because it never really felt like he was truly in danger. It felt like there was a lot of times where you were just like, oh, he's got all day, oh, he's got all day. And really the only pressure that you had was when they kind of brought all seven and they had to get the
Yes.
linebackers in there to really actually generate any rush.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of put it this way. You could have had a congressional meeting in the Minnesota pocket. Like, it was, you could have set up, you could have had an entire
Whole
filibuster
ass
in there.
filibuster too.
Yeah, everything. They could have brought out the cookbooks or whatever those guys do for their filibusters. It was incredible how free Darnold was. You're right. That's the biggest mirage of four sacks I've ever seen from one game. And it just, again, this just completely shows you what you need to do. You need to add a pass rusher. Now, it doesn't, I think we're kind of, most people are starting to kind of come around to the fact that it's not going to be Max Crosby, as sexy as that would be. You got to add somebody, a Za'Darius Smith, some tier two or tier three guy who can at least give you a ounce of, oh, this guy can win by himself without me needing to send six or seven guys. And you look right now around the rest of the NFC, the Buccaneers are dead. Lose Chris Godwin for the season, Mike Evans with the injury, who's out for 4 or 5 weeks. You look at the 49ers, they're dead. Like, you could make the argument the three best teams in the NFC are all in the North if you want to count the Packers. And honestly, depending on what happens with Caleb Williams and how much the Eagles end up hating their coach Nick Sirianni, the four best teams in the NFC could all be in the North, which is ridiculous to think about, but it might be true just given the way the NFC's playing out right now. So you have to get a pass rusher so that you can win some of these games and kind of not get caught. And yeah, I mean, it's just, I think this game was maybe perfect because it showed you how much of a glaring need it was without you getting punished for anything because you still got the win.
And it was a great offensive performance in a away division environment. It felt a little more like a playoff game, and you had the big moments at the end. It wasn't just you blowing out teams. And to go back to the defense, like you're right, it wasn't perfect. There was a lot in pressure needs to be fixed a lot. Tyrion Arnold and company struggled with Justin Jefferson at times, especially in the second half. But it was enough to win the game. You got enough stops early in the game to give this offense a chance. And that's what the defense needs to do in this kind of post-Hutchinson, pre-a solution era.
Yeah, the last thing I want to talk about the Lions is Jameson Williams and his suspension.
Yeah.
I'll quickly defend him and then I'll kind of bash him. What the fuck kind of substance is so illegal that you can't take it, but is only worth a 2-game ban? I've
Right.
never
Isn't it
seen
usually
that.
four?
I've usually seen 4 to 6, if not more, if it's just like a straight anabolic steroid and they're like, yeah, dude, like just take the rest of the season off, go to Cancun
Yeah.
early. I've never seen a 2-game suspension for this type of punishment. So what was that? I do not understand. But then at the same time, like to kind of bash the kid, your body is your marketing tool. That's how you make money. That's how you kind of stay in the league. You have to know what you're putting into it. There's no excuse to not. You have every resource imaginable to you. You have people, whether they be team provided to you, or you have your own kind of health guys, as you kind of see some of the people that kind of seriously take care of their body. They have their own private like teams and chefs and everything.
Right.
It's unacceptable to get popped for this sort of thing, even if it's by accident. Like, you have to know the rules. I don't care how stupid they are if you don't like them. You're a law school guy. If you walked into a courtroom and said, "Your Honor, I don't like the rule, therefore I don't have to follow it," how quickly would the dude sit there and throw his gavel at your head and say, "Go fuck yourself"?
Ignorance to the law is not a defense either.
Correct. So it's a little unfortunate. I mean, this 2-game suspension, oh, he's gonna miss the Tennessee game. I mean, if
We're
this
11-point
yeah, I
favorites.
mean, Tennessee, that doesn't really matter. You're gonna miss the Lambeau game against the Packers. That's unfortunate because while J-Mo might not have the continued production of a wide receiver, he does so much for this team and being able to stretch the field. And the other thing that I think goes unnoticed because it's not necessarily a stat is his willingness and his ability in the run
Does
game to
block.
block
Yep.
is amazing.
They're
So
also, it's, I think that's like one of the biggest Dan Campbell elements is all of those guys are very, very willing to block and are
yes.
all pretty good at
Yep. So that's gonna kind of that'll be missed against the Packers. I just like again, I don't want to kind of kick the kid when he's down because he's not necessarily down it. Like, this seems like another one of those type of gambling things, or oh, he didn't know the
Right.
rule. He didn't know that being at a team hotel on the road is considered a facility. But again, you have to know what's going on because this is how you make money. Like, how are the Detroit Lions supposed to give you extra contracts if you miss your entire first year with injury? Now, that's not on you. You didn't ask to tear your ACL and you didn't ask the Detroit Lions to draft you, but you start your second season with a suspension. You're in year three suspension. You're going to start to build, come to a point where how can we consistently count on you to always be available? Not to mention, once you get the first strike, if they pop you again for this, it is more severe. The next one,
Yeah.
even if it's for the same Mickey Mouse kind of macro, whatever the fuck he put in his body, it turns into a 6-game suspension or an 8-game suspension because you're a repeat offender. You can't have this stuff going on. So I certainly don't think he's a bad kid. He doesn't wake up in the morning saying, "How can I fuck someone's day up?" He's not Jordan Addison going on a DUI a week after his teammate dies and then laughing about it with social media posts later. He's not Rashee Rice or Henry Ruggs doing 140 miles an hour drag racing his friends in the middle of the day. It's just be a little bit more aware, be a little bit more mature.
Completely the rest of the league, where do you want to start? A couple of different storylines.
I'll start with the Kansas City Chiefs. Do it again, win another game where they don't play very well, and their
No.
defense kind of leads them to another victory. Again, I already brought up the Mahomes thing. He's got 6 touchdowns on the season and 8 interceptions. That's not an MVP front runner. I don't care who you are or what your voice sounds like. It's just the classic. He'll do just enough. He's kind of in that cerebral assassin mode. He's not the gunslinger Mahomes he was 5 years ago.
Yeah.
That's okay.
He knows what it takes. He's
Yep.
in that spot. Yeah, I
That
agree.
defense is incredible. He knows
Yeah.
that. Everyone else knows that. And we'll see who can figure it out, especially in the playoffs. The Chiefs have now added DeAndre Hopkins as of this morning. I'm not going to sit here and overreact because this is not the DeAndre Hopkins of 4 years ago in Arizona, and it's certainly not the
Yeah.
DeAndre Hopkins of the Texans. But It's another weapon that they can sit there and maybe try and put together remnants of one of the vintage Kansas City Chiefs offenses. It's a guy who I think, because of how good he is mentally and maybe hands-wise, I think even if the physical skills are slightly declining, he'll still be able to make a lot of plays with Mahomes just because, like, these are some of the best guys of their generation, obviously. And we'll see kind of how just how well he can do with that. Other than that, though, I mean, again, it's classic Chiefs, the 49ers. On their side, I just want to say, how the fuck do you let Debo Samuel play a football game if he has pneumonia? And again, I'm not gonna sit here and imply anything that there's some kind of relationship with the sports books, but it wasn't even disclosed. Nobody said anything about this Debo Samuel injury. This comes from the same organization that lied about Christian McCaffrey going into the year, lied about Jordan Mason and his AC joint with a
Joe
shoulder.
Burrow. Oh,
I'm talking about the 49ers.
I thought
So
you were talking about the NFL as a whole.
no, I'm talking about specifically the 49ers. That's just this year, 7 weeks into the season. So I don't truly understand what's going on, but under no circumstance should a dude with pneumonia who plays three plays, throws up on the field, and then just goes to sit there getting IVs. You cannot not declare that as an injury on the
He
report.
was hospitalized the day
I
after.
know. Like, that's just something where, again, I'm not going to imply there's some kind of bad blood going on here, but that alters sports books, that alters gambling lines. People, like, you can't do that. You have to declare this kind of shit.
Especially with the he goes in for three places. It's different when he's out last second and like he's a game time decision. They'll void those bets, but he goes in for three plays.
Yeah.
You don't get that voided
He
bet
was no,
anymore.
he like he was never on the injury report. There was never, oh, questionable or doubtful. It was he walked in, like you said, three plays, puke on field, take helmet off, jam IV into himself, and just start sitting there for the next 3 hours. That was ridiculous. So that's really interesting. I mean, we talk about Brandon Ayuk very briefly earlier, torn ACL, I think MCL as well. So his season's done. There's rumors that McCaffrey's coming back after the bye week for them, but I can't listen. I can't trust what the 49ers say. And as long as they are kind of as banged up as they are right now, this might not even be a playoff team.
No.
They're awful.
What are they at now? 3-4?
3-4.
And I say what you want because they've been all over the place and they're only 4-3. I really like Seattle, the way they play in that division. That if you don't get McCaffrey back fast, you're right. This thing is only going to get uglier.
Yep.
And you know who you also need back? Jake Moody. Been hurt though.
Dre Greenlaw.
Jake Moody's been hurt the last two games. Big
Oh, okay.
loss for the team.
The massive loss for the team. Speaking of another massive loss, Deshaun Watson. So let me just start this. Sometimes bad things happen to good people. This is not one of those times, but just thought that needed to be
This is
said.
tough. Yeah, this is a tough one.
Again, like, I don't necessarily laugh at this because, like, I don't know if you saw the video, like, his Achilles exploded, like, that was disgusting.
Non-contact like that.
His career might be over, like,
I think it is.
full stop, because I think you look at it, the contract has 3 years left guaranteed, and that includes this year, if I'm not mistaken.
It
And
does. Okay, yeah. I was
this
gonna say
year's
it's two
done.
after this year.
Yeah, this year's done, obviously. The year after that, an Achilles injury is not an ACL. You don't come back in 6 months. So I'm sure the Browns, if they wanted to, and especially if they're going to kind of embrace this we're tanking mode after they trade away Cooper and maybe they trade away other pieces, you probably just sit there and say, oh, well, he's not ready. He's not ready. He doesn't play next year. And at that point, when there's only 1 year left on a guaranteed contract, just cut his ass and eat the dead cap. Just do what the Broncos are doing right now with Russell Wilson. Say, we fucked up. It's only 1 year. I'm sure it'll be some $60 or $70 million cap hit. Now, yes, that's a large number to not have available for yourself. But if you're tanking anyway and you're rebuilding, just cut his ass.
That's what I mean. The way this season is going and the way they're selling off assets like Amari Cooper right now, I think the plan is to be bad. So why not just be bad for that extra year? And like you say, sink that cap and you actually get to be even worse because you have so much dead cap.
Well, to be fair, I mean, It almost might be like he's almost one of those cases of addition by subtraction where it was better for them to pay him to not play than it was to pay him to play. And for some reason, Kevin Stefanski just kept coming out there. He gives us the best chance to win. He gives us the best chance to win. It's like, Kevin, you guys haven't put up 20 points all season. He doesn't give you the best chance to win.
And if anything from the Deshaun injury, it gave us one of the what's going to be one of the greatest memes ever from James Winston. I mean, I've seen that in so many funny
That was
circumstances.
ugly.
Like just like the meme of it, I'm saying is how it's being used. Tough
Agreed.
quote, but the meme of it is hilarious now.
And to be fair though, I kind of understand part of that. Like the whole
Yeah,
concept of
it's
the
really
fans
tough.
booing a guy who just had his Achilles blown out as he walk is like he's carted off the field. That's kind of an ugly look. So like if you're one of his teammates, you can go at the fans. You have the right to do that, but don't sit there and say, "Oh, this is a man. He's been a model
Right.
citizen for mo What are you
Right.
model citizen for who?"
Yep. I completely agree in that you have the right to defend him because you don't want that to be you as a player, and you see something happen like that while you're on the field and you're so close to it and you're like, wow, that really can be me who'd be getting booed. But you're right. But to go on and say like, listen, I see him every day and he's a model citizen, da, 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 or like Myles Garrett, he was good for most of his NFL career. Like,
Like,
what?
was he
Come
really?
on, don't
I
say
have
that. The guy
27
is,
instances. Yeah,
yeah,
we got 20.
the guy has sexually assaulted multiple people. Like, we don't need to go down that path. Like, don't need to bring that up. Don't
Yeah,
need to
just sit there. Like, you
sugarcoat
don't have to
something
play the
that's
moral
not
high
true.
ground. Just tell, like, just say that the fans were wrong for booing. Don't even make it about Deshaun. Just make it it is wrong to boo someone who gets hurt for your own entertainment. Like, those people are out there for your entertainment. I understand they're very handsomely compensated. You're never gonna hear me kind of try and cry foul for them in that regard. But I think from a fan perspective, they kind of maybe pushed a line there.
I agree.
Oh, I think the last thing I have written down, Aaron Rodgers and the not so spooky New York Jets, another week, another
They're
prime time
not back.
loss. And this time they have the arrival of Devontae Adams. He gets his boy. And the excuses are going to be very thin very, very quickly because you've fired the guy who can become the railroaded fall guy. You brought in your boy, you brought in the rest of your boys from the previous year and a half, and you're now 2-5. You are going to run out of real estate. You're going to kind of I'm trying to think of a comp of like a player whose career ended in a similar way where he kind of just bitched and moaned, got all
Brett
he wanted.
Favre, the same exact career path. He's just got to go to Minnesota next year.
Yeah, but like I guess the thing with Brett Favre is like retires, then comes back. Like, I don't think did Brett Favre ever really hold the Jets hostage the way Aaron Rodgers has held it? Like,
Not to this level,
I
no.
don't hate the comp just because like I truly can't think of anything better, but this is such a, I talked about last week. This is a horrific look for just kind of the end of Aaron Rodgers. And more power to it, I guess. I mean, everyone likes making fun of the Jets. Everyone likes making fun of a team that hasn't made the playoffs in 13 years in a sport that is designed for you to make the playoffs every 3 or 4 years in a cycle. So it's hilarious. So, yeah, that's what I have in
I
terms
have
of
a couple of other things
go
for
crazy, go off, man.
NFL-wise. The first is Packers Texans, great game, two great teams. Just kind of wanted to recognize that game as what it was. Packers should never wear those all white jerseys again. That's just the classic yellow helmet look. Don't change that. That was my biggest thought from
I don't
that.
mind the white jerseys, but maybe not at home.
Not at home and not during the day. Like those would have been a good night game jersey, I feel
Or
like.
maybe it's later in the season, it's a little colder, maybe there's some snow on the
There you
ground in
go.
Lambeau.
There
I
you
think you can
go.
pull them off there, but you're right.
Like when the
Middle of the
Bengals wear
day,
those.
when it's 70 degrees out, stick with your classic Packers look.
Yep. Saquon returns to New York, absolutely lights them up. Interesting for me, the boos, not surprised. I was really like impressed with his response, to be honest, in that he, when I understand the boos, I appreciate my time here. I appreciate my colleagues in New York. Like, I understand it, and I understand it's a business. Just very, very aware of the situation and wasn't really petty about it. Obviously, like, it's easy to not be petty when you were 8 yards away from your best game ever, but more power to him. I was super impressed by that. And then the other one I wanted to talk about was Monday night. and the Ravens and the Bucks. The Ravens go for 41 again. Their offense looks unstoppable, but that's not really what I want to talk about. They are what they are. I mean, unfortunately, we're going to have to call them the second best team in the AFC until they take down the Chiefs, but
I think
they're the
they're better
second
than
best team in
them.
the AFC. No, but like I understand that. I agree, but you can't say it until it happens.
Fair enough.
Their only loss this year, too, is to the Chiefs.
Well, they lost to the Raiders at home.
True. I forgot they started off 0-2. Wow. But my more thing was the Bucs. And to lose your two best players on offense in one game, Godwin for the season, a guy that has kind of really dealt with long-term injuries before. Did you see, like, it was going around social media, he mouthed something, and there was a debate on whether he said to the trainer, "Back to work, is it broken?" And the trainer nods and he says, "Back to work," or if he says, "Is my career done?" Like, you can't really, it looks like both from the words done. I just thought that was interesting little insight.
I saw the video, but I only saw the back to work version of that. I didn't see anything else. Speaking of the Godwin injury, and
Oof,
I
it
get,
was a bad one.
what is he doing in the game? What are any of your starters doing in the game?
So I disagree with that. I understand, like, it's a 10-point game, and while on face, you probably have a 98% chance of losing. The game is not over. It wasn't like you were, if you're not going to kneel out the ball and you're going to just try and score a touchdown in a two-score game with over a minute left and timeouts, I think he should be in that game. I hate to say it. You're already down your best receiver. He's your next best guy. I think he's got to be in there.
And again, I think I'm maybe going to take the road of you should be just be running out the clock in that situation. It was 3rd and 17 at their own 18, and they have no timeouts left. I didn't really understand what he was doing in that game. I didn't,
Yeah.
because you're not coming back. You don't have the time to come back. You're still so far away from the field. So I understand the premise of if you're still going to be running offensive plays, you want your best offensive players out there, and I agree with that. But you should like you. Everyone loves talking about sportsmanship when the winning team tries to run up the score when the game's over. No one says anything about like that game was over. You were not coming back. What are you still running plays for?
Yeah. I don't know. I kind of think in a 10-point game, you play to the last whistle until you actually have to knee it. But it wasn't like it was a 24-point game, but
Sure.
that's just my opinion. And but big picture, you lose your two best offensive players for weeks now on a team that I actually really thought, like kind of you mentioned in what the outlook of the NFC is right now, actually kind of had a shot at making a decent run here.
Yes.
Now is greatly hindered. You're now tied for first with Atlanta, and I don't think Atlanta, while they're not going to be an 11, 12, 13 win team, they're going to be right there as a 9, 10 win team for that division. They're not going anywhere in that sense. So that completely changes the outlook of that division. I completely changed my opinion, and it's kind of like the Hutchinson injury, where I guess with the Lions won, so it was like, well, at what cost? It's just like maybe not a Super Bowl like contender in Tampa, but like, where does your season go from here? Not only was it a loss, but it's a loss of your season
I know
possibly
where
with
it
those two
goes.
names.
You trade for Cooper Kupp and you just run the guy. Chris Godwin was playing the Cooper Kupp role because they have one of the former Rams offensive coordinators calling plays for him.
Yeah.
If you had the guy modeling a different guy, just get the guy he was modeling.
Yeah. He's got the guy that you were modeling's got to get healthy first, though.
He looks like he is healthy. He's off the injury reports. Supposed to be playing against Minnesota.
There you go. Trade him.
Yeah, no,
Well,
I
even the Rams, 2-4 off a bye, like that division is a mess right now too.
That's
So,
true. They shouldn't. Again, I say it more from a kind of jovial perspective. I agree with you. That's like, what are you going to do? You lose the guy who was outplaying Mike Evans for the season, and that was just an ugly. I mean, his ankle's just facing the wrong way
yeah,
on the ground. That
that
was
was one of
nasty.
those. It was one of those, like, we won't show the replay ones for
Yeah,
good
that
reason.
was
Yeah.
nasty. Mike Evans' hamstring injury. I think they said he's going to sit out until after the bye week. It's just, yeah, it's a tough scene for them, and they were looking like one of the better teams in the NFC, and like you mentioned, that opens the door for Atlanta to come in and kind of backdoor their way into an NFC South title. I guess we'll see where we go from there, but that's what I've got.
I also think it helps out the whoever ends up being the worst of the Eagles and Commanders. Like, 'cause I think only one of those teams in the East is going to end up being a playoff team.
You don't
And
think the North's getting all four?
I don't think the North will
Neither
get
do
all
I.
four,
Once the
but
division games come through and we start beating up on each other, I agree with you.
I actually think there's a chance there's only two, but just 'cause everybody does play each other and it's still very early. But that's all I got NFL wise for the week.
Same here.
So I guess it's time to wrap it up. It's a big Saturday as far as this podcast, even though we root for the same team, so it's really not. Any last words on that before we just end this and get the boys going into the weekend?
No, you mentioned a big Saturday. I mean, for me, there's UFC 208 at 2 o'clock. Then there's Real Madrid Barcelona and El Clasico at 3 o'clock. Then there's obviously Michigan State at 7:30. So I've got kind of a nice little action-packed day of sports to be watching. So I'm ready for that. I guess the last word before I turn it over to you, given the week, given the rivalry, go green.
Go white.